Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We might just be in France, but this is global. These players are icons, their stories are noble. In fact, each story into the game is golden. It's way more than just a game. It's a player's story into the pitch and all that she overcame. It's football 2019, and this is its brand new face. Football Inside Out by Copper 90.
Yo, 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 I'm Heath.
Yeah, and I'm Monkey.
And this is Football Inside Out, a podcast from Copa 90. We're coming to you every single day from the Copa 90 Clubhouse in Paris, bringing you all the excitement from the 2019 Women's World Cup in France.
And here's what we have for you today. Canada's Erin McLeod is sadly injured in this tournament, but we caught up with her as well, Ellie Mingham, and the inside score. Today it's Canada and Cameroon ahead of their game tonight. But first, we've got a little recap from last night's matches as part of the five things you need to know going into your day. Let's give it a listen.
Football Inside Out by Copper 90.
So, number one that you need to know going into your day, there was the first upset in the World Cup. Australia lost to Italy after going up ahead on a Sam Kerr goal.
Yeah, I feel like I think I looked up the Australia, where they stand basically, and I think they're sixth best in the world. Okay. And Italy, I actually don't know. Definitely not in the
below
top 20.
Sixth.
Yeah, below sixth.
As a safe bet, below sixth.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is a real upset.
Yeah. Next one, number two, hat trick by Christiane.
Marta.
Who?
Was just, she was just Marta? There with the guitar, just bringing the vibes.
Yeah. By the way, threw the finger up on the way in.
Did you see that? What was all that
about? Threw the finger
up
at somebody.
Yeah, so
she's mad at
the
somebody.
Bird. She flipped somebody in the tunnel, but I want to know who that was.
Yeah.
But she also did it mid-guitar, which I thought was quite steamy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's style. That means you've been on stage before. Someone throws something, don't stop the song, just flip them off and keep going.
It was like no shit's given.
Yeah. But Christiane, the oldest hat trick in a World Cup.
Yes.
Move over Carly Lloyd.
Move
who
over.
Who had the record before. Granted, hers was in a final of a World Cup against Japan at 32 years. I think she's,
I think
Christiane's 34. But also, talk to me about this goalkeeper you like so much today.
Yes.
Number
so the,
three.
The goalkeeper of Jamaica, Sydney Schneider.
Yeah.
Actually American born with, I think, Jamaican parents. She was born in 1999, if that makes you feel old, everybody. She is 19 years old. And she, for me, was player of the match. Yeah. She saved so many goals from going in. She was confident. She came out at the right time. She saved a penalty as well.
And on the theme of goalkeepers, by the way, I haven't been that impressed by many of the goalkeepers. I've seen a few glaring errors, but also today, Jordan Pickford scored his penalty. The first time a goalkeeper scored a penalty for England in a knockout match, I believe.
Yep, the first time. Go on, Pickford. Yeah. God, I love him, mate. He's so, like, he's confident. That's all I can say.
Yeah, step up and do it. Number four, England was almost the most dominant team in the tournament so far. When I watched them in the first half, I was so impressed. They looked so comfortable, confident. Across the pitch, there was no real glaring weaknesses. They had a game plan. But I might be leaning back towards France as the most dominant team. Granted, they weren't really tested.
Yeah, when the first half finished, I was like, I feel so confident about this team. Even when we have a free kick or any set piece, I don't feel nervous, which as an Arsenal fan is a very rare thing.
Right.
Right? Yeah. So whenever we had that set piece, I was like, I feel fine. I feel I have the responsibility is on them and I trust them. But when we went into the second half, And I said, Scotland are going to bring it. And they did in the second half.
Yeah.
They got a goal back and they put us under pressure. And
yeah. Held on, though.
They did hold on.
Now, number five, looking to tomorrow, Canada plays Cameroon. You're going to hear a lot about that in this episode already. But Argentina, Japan, do you have any fun facts for me, Monkey?
So the last time that they played each other as a nation was in France in the 1998 World Cup when the two men's team met.
Yeah, I love it.
And also, Argentina won 1-0.
Yeah, and Argentina coming off of a couple years of not actually playing any international matches as a federation.
Yep.
That preview that Ellie has is going to be coming up soon in a future podcast. But yeah, that is it. So now we're going to get back into the rest of the show. Here is Ellie Mincham with the inside score on all that you really need to know about Canada.
Inside score.
Following on from their wildly successful World Cup they hosted 4 years ago, which saw a run to the quarterfinals that created nationwide hype, resulting in a record-breaking crowd of 54,000, the Canadians, with a squad arguably stronger than the one 4 years ago, will be looking to go one step further and make it to only their second ever semi-finals appearance.
Inside score.
But here's what you really need to know. With one of the most promising young squads in the game, off the back of a bronze finish at the World Cup and Olympics, and riding a wave of unprecedented support from fans nationwide, the role of Canada women's head coach is arguably one of the most enviable positions in the entire game. Which is why it left so many confused and upset when long-term coach John Herdman packed up and left them for the role of Canadian men's team coach. A side who haven't made a World Cup since the 1980s and still really don't look like making one anytime soon. Funnily enough, since Herdman's role change, there really hasn't been that much of an improvement in Canada's men's mediocre performances. Meanwhile, on the women's side, their form has continued to rise. That's because Herdman's former assistant, Kenneth Hinamola's transition into head coach of the women's team has gotten off to a flying start, with a run of 8 wins without conceding, including a convincing 1-0 win against tournament heavyweights England. And it's perhaps due to this continued success that the initial anger towards not only Herdman, but the Canadian FA, who played a significant role in ridding the team of their coach, has subsided as the results continue to point towards a promising World Cup, regardless of who's in charge. But perhaps the real reason there hasn't been any change in form is that the real authority in the team never really stemmed from the head coach, but the team's iconic captain, Christine Sinclair. The current Portland Thorn striker, who made her debut all the way back in March 2000, and nearly two decades later, heads to her fifth World Cup as the face, heart and soul of the Canadian women's game that has gone from strength to strength since her debut at the turn of the century. Whilst there would be doubts in any squad that makes a 36-year-old striker their central figure, Sinclair's continued prowess in front of goals, matched with a defence marshalled around Leon star Khadija Buchanan, means Canada head to France as a well-rounded unit. And provided they top the group, which would mean almost certainly avoiding the Americans until the final, the Canadians could easily beat the heroics of 2015 and give former coach Herdman food for thought on just what he's missing out on. Not that the informed Sinclair and co even care at this stage.
Big shouts to Ellie for the facts once again coming through them. Canada were the last country to host the World Cup, and here they are again. How do you think they're going to do in this game?
I think they'll do well. I think they've got a strong squad. Humble brag, I went to university with Christine Sinclair.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. And I was thinking about it. I was telling somebody the other day, I was like, she absolutely dominated people in college. It was her, Megan Rapinoe in my school. Like, there was a lot of really good players that came through my university.
This is Oregon.
University of Portland.
Portland, sorry.
Yeah. Oregon. Wow. Just throwing stuff out there.
That was touching.
Because it was a football school, we didn't have an American football program. We didn't have any other big sports. We only had soccer. So everybody in the university would go to these matches. So like the men supported the women, women supported the men. It was a very, very cool thing. We used to go to all their matches whenever they were playing at home. And she was unbelievable. And I was telling somebody that the other day. And then I was like, I actually think she's been more dominant as a professional than she was in university. And she was like the best player. They won a national championship. She was the best player in college soccer for 3-4 seasons. And now here she is closing in on 200 international goals.
What was it like between like the men's soccer team and the women's soccer team at university? Would you guys watch each other's games?
Always.
That's cool.
I mean, whenever it was possible. When I was there, they built stadium lights so that we could have night matches, things like that. But typically, sometimes we were on the road when they were home type of thing. But anytime they were around, it's a really small school. It was only like 2,500 students.
Okay.
So for like a university, you only went there if you were an athlete. You only went there if you wanted to be a soccer player. And if you wanted to be a professional soccer player, it was one of the best places to do it. Otherwise, if you're on the West Coast, you could go to UCLA. University of Washington had like 30,000 students and like the real American college experience. So if you're going there, you're going there with the purpose of competing and trying to develop as a footballer.
Is it the number one university in America for football?
No, it's gone through a lot since then. So the head coach was a guy named Clive Charles. So if you've ever seen any of these massive TIFOs that the Portland Thorns have rolled out or the Portland Timbers have rolled out, the guy with the big afro, this is Clive Charles. He was sort of the founder of, one of the first founders of like sort of football in the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. And he was the coach of both the men's and the women's university team at the same time.
Right.
So he was the main reason. So he was the Olympic team coach at that time.
That's unusual,
isn't
it?
Yeah.
To do both.
Very unusual. It's almost unheard of. I think he was maybe one of the few that did it. But they ended up winning a national championship just the year before he passed away, which was unbelievable to sort of get him to that point and achieve that with him still there. But it was a massive program. And then when he left, it was a tough thing. Again, a lot of kids want that college experience. And you don't get that at Portland. You get a professional
football
experience, right? The training, the atmosphere around athletics is a major thing. You know, you're being monitored closely as if you're in a professional environment. Whereas if you're somebody that's sort of a good player, but you're not sure if you want to play professionally or you don't know what's next, like you'd probably want to go to a big school that has a big American football team, that it's all around sort of the Greek life and the college experience mm-hmm. and the partying and all the things that you get with college. You don't really get there as a smaller community. Yeah. So the men's and the women's team were like closely related. You know, we had, you know, close friends, people dating, you know, lifelong friends now. And now a lot of those people have now gone on to either play professionally or they work at Nike or Adidas in Portland.
Right,
so everyone's still in that ecosystem. Like even when I go up there, I still end up running to people on that work for either of those brands on one of those campuses.
We just don't have that culture in the UK, that sports university culture in the UK. It's not a thing at all. The closest thing we have is Loughborough University, which is our big sports uni. And that's pretty much as close as it gets to the American system. Like the Women's England team used to play there. A few of the players that I know that used to play in the England squad that no longer do or didn't end up doing went to Loughborough University. So if you're going to do sport, you go to Loughborough. But apart from that, like, it's not really the case. Your system is set up literally like you are planning to play football for the rest of your life.
Yeah, that's changed a lot on the men's side specifically. Now with like these European leagues solidifying, there's a lot more opportunity for players to say, you know what, even on the female side, I'm going to forego my opportunity to go to college. I can go back and do that, but I want to start my career, say, at 18 instead of losing potentially 4 years of like really formative footballing years. So on the men's side especially, most of the players aren't going through the college system anymore. If you are a talented young player, you're signing into an academy or a first team contract that allows you to play with the first or second team in a major league soccer like sort of set up. Whereas before, when I was there, like the only route was either you were a phenom and you signed when you were like 17, or you were going to college and hoping to leave early with a deal in your hand.
Yeah. The good thing about women's football in the UK, though, that America doesn't seem to have, just from my experience from talking to girls and women that played football in the States and then sort of play up until university and then stop playing after university. And they're just like, oh, what do I do now? Because you either play professionally or you just kind of don't play. There's no in between. So they ended up leaving, getting a job, and they play co-ed because there's nowhere for them to play. So a lot of the players who've come over to London, so half of my football team are made up of American female players, because in the States they've just come over and they're like, we want to play somewhere. In America, there's nowhere for us to play at this level.
Yeah,
it's either pro, college, or nothing at all.
Yeah. I've spoken to quite a few girls that I know that played college soccer and then went on to the sort of the workforce in the US, and it's been a major struggle to create a new identity, right? When you go through a university system, you are part of like a culture and it is all you know. And then you step into the real world and you don't have this team around you that cares. You don't have that same type of atmosphere. And it's a huge transition into the real world that I think, you know, we all experience at a certain point when you transition from one career to another, but especially people coming out of college that have been in a very controlled environment, very professional environment, are now having to wake up and pay taxes and file taxes and
cook,
make their own food. Yeah. And do all these real life things that you had a group of people around that sort of catered to you, and it's a real shock. And then add that to the fact that there's not a place necessarily in the U.S. to go and continue to play regularly. We're starting to see some teams on the West Coast pop up that are in the lower divisions of sort of semi-pro professional soccer on the women's side, mm-hmm. Where they can continue to just sort of have that camaraderie, the competition, and all the things that sort of stimulate them. But you're right.
Yeah, in music, I see a similar thing as well. Like, especially in the DJ world, I've kind of seen people blow up over a couple of years, and then 2 years later, nobody really cares, or like they're just not in the spotlight, or they're just not the hype thing anymore. And it's kind of like, okay, so when I was like 20, I became a DJ, it became massive and really good money, and I was really young, probably spent it on loads of silly things, and it was really, really fun. And now, 6-7 years later, the hype's not as big, I'm not getting bookings. Like, what the fuck am I doing? And they're like, oh, I'm nearly 30, I didn't go to university because I was doing this. And like, and there's no real like support system. And that's not only just for DJs, that's for like pop stars as well. Right. Like pop stars come and they go, but you don't really hear about what happens to them when they go.
Right.
And they've like been like pushed into the spotlight and then maybe dropped from a label or something. And they're just like, okay, now what?
Yeah, and not only that, but when you are pushed into the spotlight, and when you're a college athlete, a scholarship college athlete, you are treated with the highest standard. So you the idea is you know, you go to class, you pass your classes, and all those types of things are important. So you have that along with playing, but a lot of things are catered to you, right?
Yeah.
You feel the sense of like pride of being taken care of and all those types of things. Whereas, you know, as soon as that all ends, you've also learned a very you differently than an average student in your university. That person's having to go through that during their formative years, right? Mm. They're going through all the normal developmental things from adolescence to adulthood. Whereas a college athlete is skipping a lot of those phases. And I'm sure the same with like any sort of phenoms or any sort of young pop stars or any sort of like quickly rising person in any industry. Mm-hmm. They skip this huge phase of human development where everyone starts catering to them and saying, oh, we'll make your life easy because we just want you to focus on doing what you do really well.
Yeah,
and all the other things that we learned. I left home when I was 16 or 15, and 15 to 18, I was living in a sports academy away from my parents across the country. And I missed a lot of normal growing things during that phase that I look back that I think have affected me as an adult because I didn't get sort of any normal trajectory of growth. I skipped all those and I became adult overnight at 15. And I think that's one of the hardest parts of transitioning from any career, even if it's college athletics, into the real world, is that that support system is gone, that care, that feeling of pride is gone. You have to go and reinvent yourself.
Yeah, and this is some of the conversations we've had with some of the players as well about being an entrepreneur. And it also, I guess, highlights the fact that maybe some people don't have to be put in an education system. They can go and do extremely well without getting a degree. You know, personally, for me, university wouldn't have fit in me. Like, I wouldn't have done well. I probably would have gone for the wrong reasons, and I would have ended up with a massive bill at the end of it.
Yeah. I have a lot of thoughts about just the university system, especially in the US, because, you know, I look at my brother and he's got his master's.
Yeah.
He's also got tons of debt.
Yeah.
To get his master's, right? And the payoff for that he's had to rack up to be a highly educated person in a professional industry, which isn't really paying off in a lot of ways.
Right.
It is from a personal standpoint, but he's racked up all of this debt. And not to say that was the wrong path for him, because he's extremely happy with what he's doing. He's doing like family therapy and things like that. But for other people, there's a number of different industries. Yes, if you can go to university, then great, but you shouldn't take on, like, he's got a 10-year debt payoff basically working for the state that gets cleared if he works for the state for 10 years.
Right.
Right. So he's committed to this whole thing, which means he can't climb up in his business, because if you go to a certain threshold of salary, you can no longer wipe your debts. It's all kinds of complexities. So I don't think it's for everyone. I don't think college or university is for everyone. We see a lot of people. There's so many new spaces and places for people to be entrepreneurs or put their kind of mind to task to find something that they're passionate about.
Yeah, I think athletes need to be given that like option as well, whether to go to school. And it, like you said, it's getting better. Like, you can go to college now, or you can just get signed from an early age. I know the Ferns, the New Zealand national team, the women's team, the government actually pay for all their Olympians and all their national players to go through university while they're still training.
Really?
And that's an option, and they pay for it, so they can or they can't.
There's, players pay for it?
No. The government pay it. The government pay for it.
Yeah.
So, you know, people are educating themselves while they're training as well. Or they can do, they cannot, they can choose. But there is a young girl from California who's been signed to Nike right?
Yes.
A football player.
Yep.
She is.
Olivia Moultrie.
She's 12?
13.
13.
Yeah.
And so she's the youngest professional female player to be signed by a big brand.
Yes.
And she got the option of either going to university at, was it Portland?
No, I believe it was maybe North Carolina.
Yeah, or to turn pro at 16. Yeah. And she chose to turn pro.
Yeah. Because North Carolina, by the way, is the biggest right. of the women's side. You know, everyone from like Mia Hamm all the way down to even now, like half the team is are UNC Chapel Hill athletes. But yeah, she signed this massive deal. I've played with her. So she comes and plays pickup with us in LA prior to signing this deal. And she plays on the field with us.
That's amazing.
Yeah, she got incredible feet. You can see she's still growing into herself. She's 13,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And you're hedging a lot on the fact that she's going to develop at the trajectory that you want. And I've talked about this a lot with people in terms of player development. I'm worried about her, not on her player development, on her personal development.
Yeah.
Right?
Like the Justin Bieber.
To get to her now, you have to get through her agents, right. her parents, her, like, she's got an, like, basically this force field of people around her protecting her from everyone else, right?
Yeah.
Which is a good thing, but, like, she's probably getting delivered lunch to her every day, right?
Yeah.
She's not doing normal 13-year-old things. She's not out hanging out with her peers. I think she's homeschooled. Like, all of these types of things worry me on a whole nother level in terms of, like, how she's going to turn out socially as an adult, right? We saw with, like, Landon Donovan on the men's side, from a young age, being 16, turning pro, being sort of our phenom. Freddie Adu, same sort of thing. Put the world on his shoulders. And it's an impossible thing to live up to because you're missing so many like human things that now, okay, whether they achieve greatness or not on the pitch, off the pitch, there's so many things that she's going to miss out on. I'm not talking about just like school dances and all that type of stuff. I'm just being a normal 13-year-old or a normal teenager that will give her the opportunity to have some sort of normal life someday, to know how the world really, really works, even if she makes hundreds of millions or if she doesn't, to know that like the real world is a completely different place and you've been catered to since the time you were 13 and you have no idea what you're getting yourself into. That's a very scary thing for
me. Yeah. How do you balance that though? Because, and is there any like memorable names you can remember from the men's game that have gone through that much pressure at that early age? I mean, I guess there's a lot.
Freddie Adu.
Yeah, right.
Freddie Adu was the biggest player in the world when he was 14.
Yeah.
Bigger than Messi. Bigger than Ronaldo, bigger than anyone, by far.
And for those that don't know, what happened to Freddie Adu?
I mean, Freddie Adu's been on, he just had his 30th birthday a few days ago.
Right.
He's been on 12, 13 teams. He signed when he was, I think, 14 years old, maybe 16, professionally. He was like in the media complaining that he wasn't starting on his team at like 16 years old, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not coming from him. That's somebody telling him to say that, right? No 16-year-old's like going to go to the media complaining when he's not on starting in the team. But from there, it was just during a time that the game wasn't mature enough. Now, if Freddie Adu came about today, he would be much more protected. He would be much more like slowly developed, be in the right system because he had an opportunity when he was 12 to go to Inter Milan.
Yeah.
But instead, they kept him in the U.S. system, signed him to an MLS team, and then people eventually gave up on him. And part of it was on him, and part of it was on the people that were managing him. And, you know, Freddie himself has fallen short as a footballer in terms of the work and time needed to achieve the greatness that he was capable of. His team has also failed to protect him, to develop him, to allow him to be a little bit normal. I mean, this guy was doing a commercial when he's 14 with Pepsi or Sprite or something with Pele.
Right.
Right? It was a global ad. Like, this guy had, you know, 6-7 figure endorsements before he was even old enough to drive. Like, this is an insane thing. And look, Freddie's gone on to have a 10-11 year career. Great. But the Freddie Adu that could have been is one of the greatest players ever. Not just the best player in the U.S., but one of the greatest players ever in terms of the talent he had when he was 12 or 14 years old.
What do you hope to see with the young girl that's been signed to Nike?
I think we've learned a lot from that. I think the game has grown immensely in the last 10, 11 years, or I guess it would be 15 years that Freddie's been a pro. I think she'll be much more protected in terms of like media, in terms of the expectations, in terms of what's going to be put on her. She's going to obviously get a lot of jealousy from current players, right? She's making a lot of money from a brand and she hasn't played a professional match. That's going to piss off a lot of people that are in the sport, right? Because they're going to be like, what about me? I've been paving the way for somebody like this. And so she's going to face those things along the way. You just have to hope that, like, again, it's not about her. It's about the team around her.
Yeah.
If that team around her allows her to be normal, allows her to sort of build slowly, and it's not like a giant move to somewhere and the pressure's on, and then all of a sudden you see them slowly like tick backwards for the next 10 years. I think we could see potentially the best player ever. I mean, her feet are incredible. She's so fast on the ball. She has fun, which was fun to see. Like, she's playing with a bunch of us ex-pros, and sometimes some of the women's national team players would come out, and it's just like a fun sort of pickup match that happens in LA. You could see all the potential there, but I'm putting it on the people around her.
Yeah, I watched some YouTube clips of her play, and she was absolutely ridiculous, like different class. I think she was playing with peers that were like 4 or 5 years older than her as well.
Yeah.
And she's not little. She's like athletically, you know, she's probably taller than me.
Yeah, she's tall. And yeah, you can tell she's still growing into that height.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And she was just like unreal.
But she reminds me of Tobin Heath in the sense of like her style and creativity. Yeah. She was fearless. Like, you know, Stu Holden, ex national team player, Premier League player on the pitch with her, and she's like going for megs on him. And
but
like,
she wasn't naive either. So I was watching some of the footage of her play, and like she would take on 2 or 3 players, but if she had an opportunity to put her friend in or put her teammate in that was in a better position, she'd pretty much always do it.
Yeah,
like she was a clever. She was played clever as well.
Yeah, I mean,
maturity in her.
One of her agents would come out and play with us as a friend of mine, and he would like yell at her when she turned the ball over, but like in transition, right? Because she's got all the tools offensively to do damage against anyone, even adults. But it was more of like in transition, turnover, you lose the ball, what are you doing next? And those are actually things that I think will build character in her and tools in her to say, I don't care how much money you make from Nike. I don't care if you're a phenom. When you lose that ball and it's a turnover, track back and play defense.
Yeah.
And that was like things that he's like sort of pushing into her at an early age, which is like this is almost very much like this Jentila thing that we talked about before in Scandinavia, which is like instilling into her that like just because you have all of this at your disposal now at a young age doesn't make you there yet.
Yeah.
We're like hedging towards you being a superstar, so you need to put in the work now, and that includes playing defense. It was actually pretty cool to see.
It's going to be really interesting to watch her progress.
Yeah.
Progress. So I think it's time for the next package. Another US college soccer player?
Yep.
Do you know what college she played at?
She played at, I believe, Penn State and Southern Methodist University down in Texas. Tejas.
This is Erin McLeod.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hashtag Copper90 Icons.
My name is Erin McLeod. I have played for many years for the Canadian National Women's Team, and I also play for Växjö DFF, which is a small club in the Damallsvenskan, which is the Swedish league. I was with the national team as early as 19 years old, and I played in the first ever under-19 Women's World Cup. And then basically from there, I worked my way up to the full national team, and I've been with them. I think my first cap was in 2001. Then I've been to 4 Women's World Cups and 2 Olympic Games with a bronze medal in 2012. I was first on the team in 2001 with the national team, and it's 2019, which makes me old. But it also just the evolution of player salaries, now women making a living. In Canada, we get money from the government, so there's always been that kind of side of it. But now as you can see, you know, like countries like Denmark and Iceland, and there's a bunch of them that where the women are making the same percentages as men. The gender equity battle has really like exploded in the last few years. The feeling of getting selected for Women's World Cup is incredible, to get selected to the roster. I'm actually not going to this World Cup due to injury, which is heartbreaking because I know what it feels like to get selected. I've been, like I said, I've been to four Women's World Cup, and I'll never forget the first time. It was in 2003, and I was the third goalkeeper, and I was 20. I would just turn 20 years old, and it's really cool. The Women's World Cup, and it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. What I think is so cool is the attention the women's game is getting from around the globe. Particularly in 2015, when we played the Women's World Cup, FIFA Women's World Cup in Canada, we had an average of over 50,000 people attending our games. And I'll never forget that, because when I started with the women's national team, we would have our family in the stands, you know, and that's about it. It's just an incredible honor, really. The most surreal moment of my career so far, I will never forget when the final whistle went of the France game in 2012, when we won the bronze medal. I remember falling to my knees, literally, because we were all so exhausted. And France, like, the statistics, we had no right winning that game, like none, but we won it. And I think that, because we changed history, the last time Canada had a medal at Olympic Games, a summer Olympic Games for a team sport, was 1936. So off the field, after the Sochi Olympics and the homophobia that was happening at that Games, I was part of the Canadian Olympic Committee at that time as a basically a player representative, and as a response to those games, Adam Vancouverden, who was another Canadian athlete, who's kind of the president of the Athletes Commission, him and myself, we worked to get sexual orientation added to the Athletes Charter of Rights for Canadians. And for me, off the field, that was, I think, probably even more significant than the medal, because, you know, and to be able to change the rights for people is, I think, the highest honor.
That was interesting.
Yeah. It's always interesting to hear somebody say that the stuff they're doing off the pitch is far bigger than what they're doing on the pitch. And she's done, you know, almost 120 caps with the national team, like, yeah, overachiever in every way. But amazing to see what kind of where her head is, right? Like, using the tools and power that she has as an athlete to make change for what, you know, she's saying for people instead of,
yeah,
just...
I think it's really, really cool when people do use their platform to make a positive change. But I also think that people shouldn't, or athletes or whoever, shouldn't be put under pressure to use their platform to make change. Maybe they just want to play football, or maybe, yeah, they just want to put out music. So when people get a bit of stick for being, maybe some say, a bit like dry or a bit boring, maybe they just want to do their craft and that's it. And I think people do get a bit sick for that. But that was really cool to hear. When was the Sochi Olympics?
Sochi was 2016, 17, 15, 14, 13, 12, 11, 10. I don't know. Somewhere.
Days by numbers.
You know it was, you know it. 2014, yeah. See, I was...
2014.
Yeah, 14.
Of course.
Yeah.
Wait, because the next Olympics is next year. It's 2020.
Yeah. Man, confusing.
In Japan. Are you going to try and go? I would love to go.
I've never been to...
Olympics?
Asia. So I went to... Don't, you guys are all looking at me funny. Yeah,
oh,
I've never
wow.
been.
Well, you're talking about your cultured coffee.
Well, you see, je suis France, oui. I've never been. I've always wanted to go, always planned to go. I thought I was going to the actual Olympics in, I think it was Beijing.
Beijing, yeah.
Yeah, when I was a player, I got the call from the Olympic coach that I was going to be going. And he was like, make sure you clear it with your club and all these types of things. You're going to be one of the three overage players because it's 23 and under on the men's
right.
side. And then he never called me back.
What?
Guys, I got all kinds of stories like this. Yeah, no. He never called me back. I was like, yeah, I'm going to it. Yeah. And then he ended up taking three other overage players. But
you're allowed to out this guy on there.
Yeah. It's Peter Novak was the coach. He was the assistant for the men's team and then said he was going to bring me in. And then I never heard from him again. But yeah, I've never actually been. I've wanted to go, but it is very far from the U.S.
It is.
And you
far.
Have to make it, like, it can't be one of the trips. I mean, technically, I've been to Asia because how you divide the line. Like, I've been to, yeah, Dubai in the Middle East, which is part of Asia, but
it's amazing. It's an amazing I've been to multiple countries there, and every single one I've been to, I've had an amazing experience.
Can you go to major cities for like a day or two, or do you really need to, like, I feel like that's my biggest hesitation always, that like I've got to make it a full trip. It's got to be like a two-weeker.
So like I went to Philippines, part of my family from the Philippines, and I'd only been once when I was a kid, and then I went back 2 years ago, and we spent a couple of days in Manila, and like you don't really need
the thriller
in Manila. Yeah, I actually got a root canal while I was in there.
Oh yeah, as you do when you travel. You
know? Filler in Manila was horrible.
Let's test out the dentistry here. Yeah, you know, the only way to really know how a country is the orthodontics.
7 hours. Oh no, 7 hours each day for 2 days in the chair. Not recommended. But I had to be done.
Is that how long it takes for a root canal?
No, it should not take that long. It should not take that long.
I was going to say, that sounds like a failed root canal. Yes. And then
I had to get the tooth pulled in the UK in the end. Didn't even work. Yeah.
Oh, but wow.
It brought me some sort of, you know, pain relief for the time. Anyway.
Not to discourage our listeners from going to the Philippines.
Actually, amazing
for
place.
The orthodontic work. But yeah, I hope to go. That'd be really amazing.
Yes, it is actually an amazing place. But the matches today, Canada versus Cameroon, I predict a Canadian win.
Yeah.
I think.
I'm going to go with Canada too. And I'm also rallying for Christine Sinclair. I don't keep in contact with her.
I was
going
to say, do you talk to her anymore or not really?
Not really. No, I don't. I do in my head because like social media and stuff makes you feel like you chat with everyone when you don't really. But no, I knew her quite well back in the day. But, you know, she's a legendary figure. She's one actually that's been very, very not detrimental to pushing the match forward. But she's one obviously with a massive, massive platform that hasn't always been the most. She's very quiet, very shy, kind of very, very just, you know, keeps to herself and has been criticized actually by people for not being one of the biggest figures in the world, for not being as spoken or out in the open about whether it's rights or pushing the game forward or using her power to even set a standard for endorsement money and all these types of things that you could maximize. People have sort of criticized her for just sort of going with it.
Yeah, it's a bit of a hard one, isn't it? Because like, I guess, you know, most people who are happy to do that find it's also part of their duty to do so. But at the same time, like, you just don't know what these people are like. Maybe they're really insular. Maybe they're really awkward. Maybe they don't have very good social skills, and they're just they find that sort of thing terrifying, and it gives them anxiety. Like, you can't really comment on that without knowing the person really well.
You just described me in 5 bullet points. Wow. I feel like you really know me now.
We got to know each other so well.
But on the flip side of that matchup, we have Cameroon, and Ellie Minjem has a wonderful little inside score. So here it is.
Inside score.
Now, Cameroon made arguably the greatest ever debut in World Cup history at Canada 2015, winning their very first match in the tournament by destroying Ecuador 6-0. They followed this up by beating powerhouses Switzerland, then only missed out on topping the group thanks to a slender 1-0 loss to then title holders Japan. Whilst they were beaten in the knockout stages with another slender loss, this time to China, the indomitable Lionesses, as they're known, left Canada with their heads held high and continued their incredible World Cup performances with a brilliant run to the finals as hosts of the 2018 African Women Cup of Nations. However, repeating such heroics for a third straight tournament will be a tough feat for a side currently being managed by their fitness coach after the man who led them to France abruptly walked out on the squad, citing issues with the FA. However, a place in the knockout stages through one of the third place spots is still a possibility if Cameroon can take advantage of a winnable opening match against New Zealand, provided their iconic Malaga star Gaëlle Dabra-Nguenamoy is in form. Not only is she the scorer of the fastest goal in women's football history, and not only did she score a hat-trick in the famous demolition of Ecuador, she was also given the nickname Freight Train by a Canada 2015 crowd who made her a fan favourite thanks to her unnerving drive and powerful style.
Inside score.
But here's what you really need to know. Whilst their incredible 2015 achievement didn't go unnoticed back home, they still didn't send shockwaves through the homeland like they would have if it had been the men's team. But what their 2015 results did do is create an unprecedented hype 1 year later when Cameroon hosted the African Women Cup of Nations. Playing in front of full houses of 40,000 or more for all their matches, the Cameroonians went on a brilliant run to the final, where it was only in their last game that they finally conceded a goal. And that final, which became the most eagerly awaited event of the year in Cameroon, created such anticipation that National Stadium's capacity was forced to be increased. Yet even then, the stadium was full 5 hours before kickoff, with the only available spaces left before the game kicked off, save for the president and his entourage. To appease the thousands of frustrated spectators who missed out on seeing their new heroes, huge fan parks with giant screens showing the games were set up to meet demand. And whilst the indomitable Lionesses narrowly lost to Nigeria, who seem to win the competition every year, Cameroon's newfound love for their women's national team became the real story of the tournament. With longtime veteran Ezra Osama telling the media, "I never imagined people would be that interested in women's football. I've been playing professionally for 14 years, and it's the first time I've felt what a male footballer must feel." So if the Cameroonians can once again make it out of the group, let alone go a stage further and equal the African record of quarterfinals, the stadium authorities back in Cameroon may once again have to amend the National Stadium's capacity for the team's return parade.
Amazing stuff.
Yeah. Big up Ellie once more.
There's always something to rallying a country, and I know I keep going back to England last summer, but there was something about that when you hear of Cameroon like setting up fan parks where you could basically service the demand of people who are interested. It's such a great thing. Obviously, a very tough first match of the World Cup.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's going to be a hard one for them. I think, I don't know, I can't see Canada actually conceding a goal, but we'll see.
Yeah. We also heard in there that there was a nickname, Freight Train. For people who don't know, have you had any nicknames? Has anybody called you the Freight Train before?
Me? No, just Monkey. Peanut. Yeah, because I'm small.
What was the one that you were talking about in front of goal that they called you for a while?
They called me Goat, but that's not in a good way.
So greatest of all time? Like, no. Like Steph Curry, LeBron James?
No. Do you know those goats that when they get scared, they like fall over and pretend they die?
Yeah.
So that was, I did that a couple of times in front of goal, and yeah, I got called the Goat.
Oh, wow. Just froze up.
Just froze up.
That's absolutely phenomenal visual. Wow. Okay. Well, we'll work on a new nickname for you then.
Thanks.
I mean, Monkey's a good nickname, but I've got some day and numbers for you.
Okay.
Are you ready for the quiz? All right. The first one for our day and numbers is 7.
David Beckham is number 7, or 7 days in the week. This is so broad. Go on.
Close. Norway have now won 7 first matches of a World Cup in a row, dating back to the very first World Cup where they lost in 91, 4-0 to China.
Ah, go on, Norway.
Yeah. 2. Oh, it's a record set yesterday in the World Cup, which is 2 penalties scored by a single person for the first time in a Women's World Cup.
Ah.
Match. Yeah.
Okay, that's a good one.
4 million.
4 million. It's not the amount of people tuned in, because you know that was 9. It's not tickets, because that was just over 1 million. No, don't know.
Okay. You're wrong then.
Yes, I was wrong.
You were actually, you got half of it.
Did I?
Because 9.8 was the amount of people that tuned in, but 4 million was the amount back in 2015 who tuned in for the first match here in France, and it was 9.8 for the opener this time around.
So amazing.
Double, yeah. If my math is correct.
That is correct.
That's it for today's Football Inside Out. We will be back tomorrow, so make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you listen to your podcast so you never miss an episode. And if you've enjoyed it, leave us a review.
And get in touch, because we'd love to hear from you guys as well. Send us emails and voice notes to footballinsideout@copa90.com. We'd love to share your thoughts on the show, and tweet us using the hashtag Copa90InsideOut. And one more bit of information for you guys. If you're in Paris, we are holding a film festival here at the Copa90 Clubhouse today from 12 till 4:30 p.m. Running a series of documentaries about women in football. Come join us. Bye.
Copa90. Football Inside Out.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.